This is the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for May 13th, 1999. Senator Gary George, Chair.
Well, you guys can handle it.
All right. Let's get the amendment.
We got a copy of the bill. Or this bill?
Oh, you're ready. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. It's Thursday, May 13, 1999. At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3381. Brad, tell us where we are with this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3381A allows tagged and undersubscribed controlled hunt drawings to be made available to licensed hunters at up to four times the standard tag fee. In a controlled hunt, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife issues a specific number of tags per wildlife unit. In most wildlife units, people applying for tags outnumber the tags available. However, in some units, the tags available outnumber the people applying. Under current administrative rules, unanticipated or leftover tags for antler-less game animals may be reassigned at regular prices. However, a hunter is not eligible to receive a second tag in a season. Proponents of the bill assert that the legislation gives Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife another tool to improve wildlife management and revenue growth while affording hunters an enhanced recreation opportunity. And additionally, we do have Dash 1 amendments that I believe Representative King or Mr. Harder will speak to.
Welcome, Representative King.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I apologize, Dash 2 amendments.
Thank you. Al King, State Representative, District 44, Eastern Lane County, and House Bill 3381 is a very simple bill. It allows tags from an unsubscribed controlled hunt to be made available to licensed hunters to basically allow a second hunt for a motivated hunter in a circumstance where licenses or the expected take, you know, from a hunting unit wasn't fully subscribed. It came about understanding that we're seeing a decline in the number of hunters, and that ODF&W is well positioned to be able to see what's the appropriate management and harvest in different areas for their different objectives. And so when we can identify, and we want to leave a lot of flexibility into this, that we have not fully hunted in one area, that it will allow a second hunt for a hunter. So that person has gone out and they've bought their vehicles and they bought their equipment and they've scheduled their vacations, and they're kind of limited to the bow hunt or the black powder hunt or the east side or the west side, etc. But that's kind of it for the year for them, and that if we're not achieving our goals in terms of the take for different units, why not allow for a second hunt for that person that is motivated? And the fee that was recommended is four times the standard tag fee. So this helps out ODF&W have a source for additional revenue. And at the same time, the motivated hunter is paying a premium price, for that second opportunity. On the other hand, clearly if the regular tag is $10 and the second opportunity is $40, we're still within the range of almost everyone there. We are not saving these tags for, the very rich people who might come from out of state, et cetera, for premier hunts. This is, within the reach of the typical hunter in Oregon. I'd like to bounce for Harder to speak to his amendment, which I support, and also add any comments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ron Harder, Oregon Sportsman's Defense Fund. The amendment is to clear up legislative intent. The intent of Representative King when he first drafted this was for this to be an additional opportunity and would not replace any existing programs. And so on line 44 on page 2, it adds the language that's in the amendment that does clear up the intent of the bill, which is to have this program not replace an existing controlled hunt tag or tag program. We are in support of the bill, and thank you very much.
Senator Dukes.
Just one question. These tags are available still in the area of the original hunt, right? They don't take these tags and move them over to another area.
Correct. What we're trying to do is to make sure that, you know, we're staying within whatever the biological intent for any district was, to not exceed that. And they do need a lot of flexibility because sometimes they aren't going to know until a little bit later how many were taken, and then still have enough time to allow someone to be able to go into that prescribed hunt. So,
are these just for doe hunts, or is this broader than that?
This was any big game.
Okay.
Familiar with the bill?
All right.
Cool. All right. I'm going to go ahead at this point and close the public hearing on House Bill 3381, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3381.
Mr. Chairman, this is a wonderful bill.
I love this bill.
I would like to move this bill to be amended with the A2-A2 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I have no idea that someone was here. Mr. Chairman, I move the A2 amendment to House Bill 3381.
Second time. That's good. Without objection.
Now that we've moved the amendments, Mr. Chairman, is a motion to move the bill in order?
Yes, it would be.
So moved, sir.
With a due pass?
With a due pass.
Mm-hmm. Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3381 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Duke.
Aye.
Senator Farioli.
Aye.
Senator Wild.
Aye.
Senator
Bush. Aye. House Bill 3381 is declared passed. Who would like to carry it?
Thank you.
There's two down here.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Farioli will carry the bill. Representative Keith, thank you. Thank you. Good bill. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3381, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1320. Brad, tell us where we are.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1320 creates the position of Natural Resources Policy Administrator, defines duties, appropriates monies from the general fund, and does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The bill grants appointing authority to the President and Majority Leader of the Senate and the Speaker and Majority Leader of the House of Representatives to select a Natural Resources Policy Administrator by unanimous agreement. The administrator has specified duties, including research into natural resource matters, determination of facts concerning natural resources, providing recommendations to the Legislative Assembly regarding natural resources policy, analysis of natural resources measures, and other duties as directed by joint or concurrent resolution of the Legislative Assembly. The administrator also has authority to enter into necessary contracts and to set internal rules regarding the processing of legislative requests. The administrator is also responsible for providing natural resource information to the public. The administrator's salary is set by the appointing authority. Subject to approval by the appointing authority, the administrator may hire necessary staff. The administrator is responsible to maintain the confidentiality of official matters and is prohibited against opposing, supporting, or otherwise attempting to influence legislation.
Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to present Senate Bill 1320 to you and the members of the committee. Colleagues, this is an opportunity to give the legislative branch the resources that I believe that we need to do some of the management discussions that have been necessary in an increasingly complicated area of natural resource management. We have so many issues and so few qualified staff and so little opportunity to coordinate our agendas and our activities that I believe that an administrator will help fill the legislative need for research, coordination among the members, for policy discussions and the kinds of things that we will be dealing with in future bienniums, including far more complicated and direct management issues involving the Columbia River. And if you just look at some of the issues, the Bonneville Power Administration, the management of the fisheries on the river, the generation of hydroelectric power, the irrigation issues, shipping, just to name a few, not to mention species management, the Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act, and so forth, all that will affect the production of natural resource issues and products and commodities, and the management of private lands relative to natural resources. So, and that's just one area of the state. The Klamath adjudication, the irrigation and agricultural issues in southern Oregon, the forestry issues, the forest health issues on the east side of the state, the forest health issues on the west side of the state, the whole concept of the interface between public policy creation and legislators. If we look at the model that we have now, each legislator has a budget for staff during the sessions and during the interim. It's arguably inadequate. We're citizen legislators. We don't really have full-time staff availability during the interim on our legislative staff. We have a group of folks that serve a function in the legislative research offices, but we go somewhat to a skeleton-type crew during the interims. They do maintain offices and they can do work on research issues. But the kinds of issues that we're getting into with natural resources are continuous, ongoing, and growing more and more complicated as time goes by. What I was looking for was the ability to put a natural resource policy administrator into place that has the same essential capability as do our administrators for legislative fiscal issues, for legislative legal counsel, and for offices that are also administrated under administrative legislative administrative offices, like the building management and maintenance and facilities management that go on here. This is a new position. It has not existed in the legislative branch. It's analogous to the governor's natural resource office. It's my intention that the people that work under the natural resource policy administrator serve members of the legislature, regardless of their party affiliation, equally, that the research that they do on behalf of members be available to that member on a confidential basis, that it be very highly qualified and used essentially to inform legislators on issues and inform their decisions so that they'll be timely. One of the things that's been very frustrating for me as a legislator is having to rely on information provided to me by folks that are interest holders, stakeholders, not being able to have an independent arm within the legislature that I could rely on in the interim to say, hey, I've been given this piece of information, I need this research firm. My concern in the circumstances that we have today is that these issues are so complicated and far-reaching that if I were allowed to, I'm sure I could monopolize all the research staff in the building during the interim on just the natural resources issues that affect my district. So the default position is that we do our own research or we don't do adequate research. And so the fact is we come to our legislative sessions less prepared than we need to be to be truly effective in integrating natural resource policy. I sought and received permission from the leadership in the Senate for a priority bill. This is my priority bill, so that's why you're seeing it rather late. There are financial implications to creating this position, and that's recognized by the leadership in the Senate. This bill, if approved in the committee today, would need to go to Ways and Means and be heard there. And then the provisions would have to be made for financing this position. But it's intended that this position serve the legislative branch, inform the legislative deliberations, and make our policy on natural resources forward-looking rather than reactive. And I think we've all felt real pressed by the complexity of issues and disadvantaged because we have to be reactive rather than proactive in setting public policy. I think this agency position, this administrative raid, office will give us better discussions between the executive and the legislative branch, and we'll have more capability to get the issues fully explored and on the table. There's a little bit better equity between the branches. The legislature is a co-equal branch in government. We need to be fully empowered to make good public policy decisions, and I think this is a tool that we had at one time. As a matter of fact, when we were discussing legislative history with the governor and the governor's chief of staff, Mr. Wyatt and Roy Hemingway, before about 1982, 83, we had far more legislative staff than we do today. The budget cuts apparently started at the administrative levels within the building, and when the smoke cleared from the downturns in the economy and the loss of revenue to the legislature, what we had was sacrificed a lot of the capability for research that we had in the building during that period. The governor has managed to restaff those offices in the executive branch. We're far behind the curve in terms of rebuilding that capability in the legislature. So I hope you'll consider this for what it is, capacity building for the legislative assembly in natural resources, research, and policy. And I'll be happy to try and answer any questions the members may have.
I think this is a pretty good idea, although you've just given a great speech for full-time legislature, incidentally. I think it's a pretty good idea, but I'd be far more comfortable if we could stop after Section 2. I'm not sure that you really want an administrator around here who can hire as many employees as they find necessary and set their salary. That, to me, seems to be a legislative duty that I don't think you want to turn over to somebody else. And as far as Section 4, Sub 1 is, this is not going to be a lawyer-client privilege situation, so I don't think that today anything that is in the hands of a committee administrator is public record. And I would be real nervous about saying that suddenly public records were not public anymore, but that they were confidential. I don't think the public records law will let you do that, and even if it would, I think it's a bad idea.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Duke's questions, the language from the bill comes from the same language that creates other administrative positions in the building. And there is, when I read the issues put forth in this draft, I wondered also about the attorney-client privilege. The confidentiality extends to who made the request and the nature and scope of the request. The documentation, of course, is the public information when released, but until released is apparently covered by the confidentiality agreements between the legislator and the administrator. It's the same one that we have not only with legislative fiscal, but with legislative counsel. So right now, if you ask your administrator on a committee to keep research confidential, they are allowed to keep that information and must keep that information confidential. So this is the same kind of principles that are at work with our committee administrators, our legislative fiscal officers, and our legislative council officers. So this is sort of standard language in the agreements that have created the other other administrative positions in the state government.
From taking something to them and say, please do the research and then hang on to it.
Nothing, Mr. Chairman.
And you're saying that in that case it would not be public record?
Mr. Chairman, I'm saying that would be covered by the confidentiality agreement between the legislator and the researcher.
I'll bet a request for, what is that called?
FOIA, Freedom of Information Act. Yeah, I believe those are privileged communications. And, Mr. Chairman, lest I forget the first question that Senator Gooch asked, the hiring and firing ability is also vested in all the administrators that have an administrator role in this building. For instance, Mr. Stinson has the hiring and firing ability for legislative fiscal, and then he makes a request for a budget, And that's approved or disapproved through the normal processes in the building, and that's what gives him the limitations that he has to operate under. And it would be the same in this situation. You can hire as many people as you want, but you only get a dollar. You know, so those things are limited by the approvals that are made in the legislative consideration in the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Chairman, you have to approve specific FTEs and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I sense a 4-2 vote here, so I won't try to prolong the agony, but I would like to ask a couple questions for the record. One is, we live, as you know, I'm a one-note Johnny, we live in a zero-sum budget game here, so where do you grab the $244,000? From what program?
That is a good question, Senator George, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Corcoran. I have talked to the co-chairs about this issue and let them know that I have a priority bill. I have talked to the Senate President and the leadership in my section in the House. I've talked to the leadership in the House. I misspoke, I said the House and the Senate. So there are many unfunded bills in this process at this point. There are unallocated resources and resources yet to be identified by a future negotiation that closes us on the budget. And my hope is that even if we only create the legislative concept and operate the positions, that we move forward with the concept and that those resources have not been identified. You know, I don't know where I'm going to go get the money. I will tell you that I've conferred closely with the chairman of the Ways and Means Subcommittee for Agriculture and Natural Resources, which I happen to be, and if there's an opportunity in the agency efficiencies to fund this position, I intend to take that opportunity.
And one final question, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the discussion. Thank you. You mentioned the discussion with Bill Wyatt and the governor. Was there any conclusion reached on the part of the governor in terms of supporting your bill?
No. As a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, the information that was imparted to me was had to do with the legislative history and the administrative history and the essentially the different configuration that we now enjoy as opposed to what we had in public policy. And it was sort of an observation. I think it was almost a lamentation, because it's clear that there's a disproportionate capability in natural resources public policy between the legislative and the executive, and that doesn't necessarily mean you get good decisions. It doesn't mean you get bad decisions either. What it means is that there's 90 people that don't really have access to the kind of in-depth research that I think people need to do to understand natural resource issues. They're not just kind of an either-or choice anymore. They're way more complicated than perhaps citizen lay people who happen also to be legislators are prepared for. And you find that stuff out when you get in the building. The observations that Mr. Hemingway made that I thought was really informative was that at one point in time there were 7 or 8 full-time researchers that covered a wide variety of public policy issues, and it was his opinion that legislators were far better served with information at that time than they are today. And with term limits and some other changes that we've seen in the legislative process, I think good information and timely information and forward-looking information and proactive analysis in public policy is probably going to be more and more important. We don't have the continuity that we used to. As chair of the Subways and Means for Natural Resources, I replaced a person who had 28 years service in the legislature. And that won't happen again. You know, as we move out of this legislative session and into the next, we'll see term limits begin to take effect in the Senate as we've not seen before. And we'll lose a lot of folks. Senator Leonard moved to the House because of the effects of term limitations. I think he would have preferred to run again as a senator, but in observance of the limitations, he ran for the House.
certain the Senate leadership would have preferred that alternative.
Well, actually, I don't think so, but you never know. We haven't, not all of us are in, Mr. Chairman.
Well, there's been mention of a trade. That's
and I don't know how the House leadership feels about it either, as a matter of fact. All things considered.
I do.
But the point is the continuity is certainly going to leave this building on both sides of the aisle. And I just have an aspect of quality research in the interim as well, so that we can be prepared for some of these issues. Seems to me to be a better way to manage than we're doing now.
Well, Senator, I actually agree with a whole lot of what you said. I really do agree with the research component of it and the giving the legislature a fair shot at this. I do think actually we do have a fair shot at it in some regards because of our access to agency staff. This does appear, I mean, I just got to be real frank. I mean, you look at the sponsorship and co-sponsorship of this, it's all Republicans and I really wish it. I think it's unfortunate that there hadn't been sort of a bipartisan discussion of this because I think we might have been able to get something. And the other problem is, I mean, in principle, is that since we have no co-chair's budget, it's just practically impossible to support anything that would require, general fund dollars. If it came from other funds, I might have a problem with.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree with Senator Corcoran. I think the opportunity for co-sponsorship across the aisle was somewhat limited by the fact that a priority bill came late in the session. I have not had a chance to discuss the full implications of the budget issues. We haven't come to closure on the budget. I would be happy to have any person in the process who wished to be a co-sponsor join us at some point in time. I'm happy to have it. I thought the appropriate thing to do is get this thing moved through the processes, and I feel to a certain extent we're stepping from one tilted ice floe to another as our committees are shutting down at the end of the week. So I'm hoping that we can move this to Ways and Means and give it a half-life that way. And if we could do that, that would be great. And I would welcome sponsorship from the whole body because the intention is to set up a mechanism that serves the whole body.
Chair, along those lines, you've got a four-member appointing committee. Who breaks the tie?
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chairman, to the commissioner, we're after a tie, I think. We're trying to get four persons.
Say it has to be unanimous.
The appointing authority is singular.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I don't know, I suggest that that's kind of an impossible situation. It doesn't say how much time, it doesn't give a limitation of forcing it through the table, and this could be a real
Mr. Chairman, to the question, I believe that there are qualified people that could get the support of all four of the appointing authorities. If there is a question about the removal of the appointee, we could amend that portion with a section in the Ways and Means Subcommittee.
He serves at the pleasure. Does he have to continue to have unanimous agreement?
That's, I guess, where I would also... He didn't have unanimous agreement at any time, could he then be sent on his way?
Well, I would yet to need an administrator that has unanimous support from any four people in the building at all times, so I would think that all...
Sam Walker, right over there. We love him.
Yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he?
I think there ought to be some type of... Either a term or something in there that they would serve for so long or
Chairman, what I'll do is make sure that Senator Fisher's concerns are addressed in an amendment before the subcommittee on Ways and Means.
Yes, we just lost one with term limits on these appointments, so they're probably going to be better now.
There's a question about the removal of the appointee. We could amend that portion with a section in the Ways and Means Subcommittee.
He serves at the pleasure. Does he have to continue to have unanimous agreement?
That's, I guess, where I would also. He didn't have unanimous agreement at any time. Could he then be sent on his way?
Well, I've yet to meet an administrator that has unanimous support from any four people in this building at all times, so I would think that all...
Sam Walker, you're right over there. We love him.
Yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he?
I think there ought to be some type of either a term or something in there that they would serve for so long
Mr. Chairman, what I'll do is make sure that Senator Fisher's concerns are addressed in an amendment before the subcommittee on Ways and Means.
Yes, we just lost one with term limits on these appointments, so they're probably going to be better now.
Well, he could talk like a whole timer, but it sort of has been tradition around here for a whole lot of years that we don't do substantive work in Ways and Means. I was also curious as to why the majority leaders were involved. I'm more accustomed to the president and the speaker making appointments, especially on staff, and not the majority leaders.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, that was my choice in the bill. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke's question about the substantive changes. The choices for referral would be, I believe, because of the timeline, would be to Ways and Means. There have been substantive amendments made in Ways and Means and in full Ways and Means and subsequent referral to open committees. In this case, it would be the Rules. So there are some choices that we could make.
Suggesting that this committee couldn't do it?
Well, I'm just suggesting that between now and the time that we move to subcommittee in Ways and Means, which is the hopeful destination of this bill, because it has a fiscal impact, and then have that heard and possibly move back. I'm not sure how long the chairman intends to run the committee. I was under the impression that we were to be shut down by the 20th. Right. So the point is, Mr. Chairman, with the 48-hour rule notice, I certainly could do the research tomorrow on the who would be involved in a decision to end the service of the administrator, and I'm certain there's a language like that in other administration bills.
That was my question.
If there's time to do that, I would certainly want to bring this back at the next regularly scheduled meeting of the committee. But in any case, I'd want to see the bill move forward to Ways and Means before the shutdown of the committee. I hate to have this bill stranded. And I'd be happy to do that research, Mr. Chairman.
Tom Brain, did you want to speak to the bill? Yes, Attorney Fairley, you want to just stay right there? If you'd like to
go aside, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
That's your pleasure. Thank you.
Still in a public hearing, but we can be a little bit more casual.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink, and I'm speaking for myself because I do not have authority to speak for the gentleman on this issue. And for myself, having worked with the legislature, and in fact everyone on this committee except for Senator Cochran in the last session, I enjoyed that process and wish I had more time because there was numerous requests at times for more help of this very nature. I see and I've just looked at the bill, just nothing, but I thought, you know, this is something that I believe is needed. the institutional memory. As all of you know, I worked for Senator Kintai last time, and what a tremendous institutional memory was lost. This position, and maybe it needs some refining, but could provide some of that back to the people who move through the legislature because of term limits. Something that I think this position could help resolve, I testified as a lobbyist and presented a bill on the Marine Mammals Protection Act for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I brought it to this committee, and there was testimony from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that was contrary to my testimony as a lobbyist and what the bill did or did not do. And this could be something that, as members of the Senate, you could say, now we're in a quandary. We have somebody we trust both sides. Check it out. And you could feel much more comfortable, I believe. And your committee administrator from time to time has time to do that. But again, having been there at this time of the game, it would be virtually impossible. And then in the interim, I think they would be totally swamped if this position were available to do research at the federal level. Like they mentioned, the Clean Water Act and Endangered Species Act, how does that affect the state and so on? And be much more knowledgeable than for an informed vote in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1320, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1320.
Mr. Chairman, it was one of those interesting things about bringing the bill before any committee. You always learn from the colleagues on the committee. Always do. And I think Senator Duke's question is a good question about the whether or not the appointing authority has to always agree unanimously and whether the pleasure of the body means if two of, or three of them are displeasurable, does the fourth have a veto? I think this information that was included in the bill is standard type information. It was my impression it was sort of boilerplate stuff. Maybe the only difference is that the appointing membership, instead of an even or an odd number, is an even number and it's all the majority party members. Perhaps we could take a good look at that and figure out what we need to do with that. And if there's time on the committee administrator's schedule to bring it before the chairman, I'd like to bring it back because I'd like to move it out with a good discussion and all the questions answered. And I agree with Senator Duke, it's not a good thing to try and amend a bill in a non-substantive committee, although they can be done. I'd rather get it right than do it over. So if the chairman doesn't mind, I'd like to research those questions and bring it back to the committee for a work session if we have time. If there's a danger that the bill will die because of lack of time to get the research and reschedule and move it through the processes, I'd rather move it forward. And we're not a joint committee,
right.
So we need to have this heard on both chambers and in both substantive sides in subcommittee before we get to and go to Ways and Means. So it's sort of a foot race. And I know I sound pretty optimistic about signing that, but I just think that there's going to be a spirit of brotherhood that descends on the building, and people are going to come to closure on those substantive issues, and we'll be out of here by July 1st.
They changed the medication again Sunday.
It's the coffee.
What is it? What are the things for
these terminals?
Oh, there the Republicans start with the marijuana again. Yeah, here we go.
Okay, let us deal a little bit here. What I want to ask the question, would anyone's decision about this bill, and probably too, that had already expressed some opinion, would it change if that change was made?
What change?
The changing the line 8, dealing with that, serving at the pleasure of them.
Oh.
It would depend, Mr. Chair, on how it was changed. You like that answer?
Council, the fact that you might have different parties as majorities in the different houses
And so it would allow, you might say, some opposition viewpoints under certain circumstances.
Having the
Speaker of the House and having the Speaker of the Senate wouldn't. I still don't know why you put in the majority. I'm sorry.
I relied on the drafting decision made by a legislative council, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the administrators in the building are similarly hired and similarly constructed. Mr. Chair.
Senator Corker.
The only way I could support this bill is if there were amendments that allowed the committee to be bipartisan. It's clearly inappropriate there's no such thing as partisan research. There's no such thing as partisan research. Partisan research is biased research by its very definition. I would honestly, I really do. I voted for every ag bill that has to do with research. I'm a strong proponent of that. If this bill was constructed so that it was a bipartisan, if we put the word bipartisan in there, and we have the people that select this person, and this would take care of any mix of minority, majority, Republican House, Democratic Senate, any mix of that, is to have the Speaker, the President, the majority leaders of both chambers as the four appointing authorities. And I still, frankly, would think that it would strengthen the bill to keep in the language of unanimity in the, because I think that would guarantee bipartisanship. Because then I think we'd go to researchers that both sides respect. Because it's just been too often in this building, the game farm discussion in 95, I use as an example to people of dueling science. And it was dueling science of the highest caliber. I mean, they brought in people from, scientists from other countries to talk about, red elk and all the, the benefits of game farms. And we had our own scientists from the United States that came in. Same with the Gaming Commission. We had science from all over the place. You know, if this is nothing but an attempt to get more staff for Republican leadership, then let's call a spade a spade. We already did that once with the additional staff for the majority and minority offices in both the House and Senate. You know, I'm just trying to be as honest as I can here, and I think that if we were really to be honest about this, that's what we would do. I then wouldn't even have a threat about confidentiality. I would deal with that kind of confidentiality the same way I deal with the confidentiality that we enjoy with legislative counsel. I think the problem would be, of course, the assets necessary to do research, and having confidentiality there would be very problematic if you had one request that could chew up an entire budget, obviously. But research often is simply accumulating data of prior research. So those are my concerns. Again, I'm not going to hold up the process, run the sucker through, 4-2, do what you got to do. But if we wanted to do it right, that would be my suggestion.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Actually, I think Senator Carper makes a lot of good points. The only caveat I would make is that I wouldn't want to create an administrator position that doesn't meet the same standards or function under the same rules as the other administrators do. And the point of research that I was offering to bring back is if the other administrator contracts read exactly like this one, I wouldn't want to bring an amendment back that makes one that's hybrid. I would agree that a bipartisan appointing committee would make the bill stronger. The scrupulous standard that we hold up for our committee administrators and for our fiscal officers and for our legislative council and for our administrative administrators, is that they will be scrupulously honest and scrupulously nonpartisan, not just bipartisan, since we have three parties in the building. I keep remembering Representative Jensen, he's an independent. And I think there's a high degree of trust in those people. I mean, I have felt no misgivings about sharing confidentialities with any of the staff in the building, whether they're committee administrators or leg fiscal or leg council. And I think they are appointed in the same way. I think they are worked for the majority parties in both houses. They could be different. And I think they are also subject to the appointing authority. What I'm trying to tell you, Senators, I don't think this language is constructed just for this bill. I think it's the same stuff we got everywhere. The research that I was offering to bring back is to say, hey, let's take a look at these other contracts and enabling legislation. If it's the same, I would ask you to support it as is. If there's something that could be or needs to be changed, I would certainly think that a bipartisan approach to appointment with reaching across the aisle to select the administrator would just make that person a better administrator and give that person more support. But I think this is language that we see in all the administrator agreements. And if we hadn't already overburdened our legislative council on salmon issues, they might even have been able to accompany me here and answer this question.
Okay, well, I'm assuming that those who have requested to visit this bill again would be willing to spend a little extra time if we need you to squeeze this into Monday and okay. Great. Well, then would you go to work on that? And
I will, Mr. Chairman. What I'd like to do is bring it back at the earliest convenience because if we were to move this bill today as is, I could also do that same research and bring it before the House committee. But I would really like to have a good, strong vote in the Senate committee and on the Senate floor and out of the Ways and Means Sub. And, in fact, we may not be able to move this thing out of the Ways and Means process. So I wouldn't want to hold it up. But I do think the amendments would be worthwhile. So it's your pleasure, Mr. Chairman. I'll bring it back here.
We're being very candid here. Let me just ask the two members if they would be agreeable to the commitment that, in fact, that would be addressed if it does make it out of Ways and Means.
Well, my question would be, I would rather see it go to the floor than go to Ways and Means. I think it's kind of pointless to refer to Ways and Means, have a referral to Ways and Means, without having the support of, see what kind of support you had in the Senate. But that's my own. I mean, I'll certainly cooperate, either way you want to do it. I'm not going to give instructions on it. But I do want to say one thing, Mr. Chair. Since the good senator brought up the issue of administrative staff, this was the first session of my three sessions where I ever had any question about the hiring practices when there was two individuals hired who were involved very deeply in campaigns. And prior to that, I never batted an eye about confidentiality in the process. And I have total respect for, everybody in this process. But boy, you talk about raising eyebrows.
Senator Dukes.
It would be possible for this to visit Ways and Means on the House side, which might free up a little bit more time on the Senate side. Actually, what's the bill in committee?
Mm-hmm. That's the most you're running out in.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, no, we've gotten along well here. We want to continue that to the very end. Senator Perriola, it's your call.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was sort of assuming that Ways and Means full committee would assign this to the Ways and Means Joint Committee for Natural Resources. Mm-hmm. That's what this is. So, either way, I think we're going to get, if we get this bill through the Senate, we can amend the bill in the House. If there is an amendment needed, I'll work on that there. I'd like to have the full support of the committee with that caveat, if I could. In terms of the House of Substantive Committee, I would appreciate any co-presentation. If we do an amendment, I'd like to have other people that ask for the questions and want to be amendments with me when we make the presentation for the amendments, and then hopefully move it through the processes and Ways and Means and see if there's any money to do this. So. Okay. Well, golly. And I guess I just told our colleagues across the aisle, if I make the pledge to do the amendment, if there's some if there's an anomaly in this bill, I would pledge you to cure that anomaly on my outside with an amendment. If this is the way we do administrative hirings, then I would ask you to support it the way it is.
Can I trust you? It's not that. I have this old-fashioned notion that if I'm...
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to bring the bill back Monday.
Right.
Do the homework and come back to the committee.
We will do that.
I think this is a bill that's worthwhile. It's my intention to serve every member in the legislature.
Okay.
And if we can do that.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for your effort on this. And what we're going to do at this point. Oops.
wants to reopen it.
Right now, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 1320.
Chairman, while we're still in public hearing on 1320, I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity to have the bill heard. We had a great discussion here today. Thanks very much.
I'm anxious, too, to find out if that is, in fact, standard off of the border plate and language.
I believe it is.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. I'm going to go ahead at this point and open the public hearing. Did I close the work session on that? I did, didn't I? Tom, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2075. Brad, tell me where we are.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2075 removes requirements that the Oregon State Fair Commission approve all service contracts for the Oregon State Fair in excess of $1,000. Removes commission approval requirement for expenditures appropriated monies in excess of $10,000. The Oregon State Fair reports that removing the requirements on the Oregon State Fair Commission to approve certain contracts would allow the commission to focus on broader policy issues of the State Fair rather than small details of day-to-day operations. The Oregon State Fair would still be subject to the competitive bidding requirements set by the Department of Administrative Services administrative rules. All contracts over $75,000 must currently be competitively bid. The State Fair would also remain subject to the statutorily required Department of Justice legal sufficiency review for contract amounts above $100,000. And, Mr. Chair, we also have conflict amendments on this bill for the Dash 1 amendments before you. If we were to pass this bill, we would need these amendments to avoid conflicting with House Bill 2074, which was body earlier passed and essentially contains the existing law that we would be changing here today.
Okay, Rusty, I'm going to leave this up to you. We have a need to move to a work session. There is a agreement here to pass it. You can come up and lose a vote. This is a wise man indeed. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2075, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2075.
Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2075-85-1399.
Senator Dukes has moved the Dash, I don't know if I have that right here, Dash 1 amendments to House Bill. Thank you. House Bill 2075-1399 without objection.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2075 as amended to the floor with a Dukes recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Dukes moves House Bill 2075 as amended to the floor with a Dukes pass. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Corbin.
Aye.
Aye.
Senator Perry.
Aye.
Senator Fisher.
Aye.
Senator
Wild.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2075 is amended to pass the floor with a due pass. And does anyone want to carry this? I normally do these, but that's okay. Does anyone want to do
this? I get
Okay. Sure, Senator Dukes will carry House Bill 2075. Is there any over that? Yes, there are. Yes, we're going to do that. You want 33 with 81?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 3381 for the purpose of casting a vote.
Aye. Fisher votes aye.
Senator Corcoran and Senator Fisher both vote aye on House Bill 3381. Thank you very much. And I'm going to close the work session again on House Bill 3381. Is there any further business come before the committee? Seeing none, we'll be adjourned. Thank you, everyone.